Welcome to California Now, a podcast produced by Visit California. I'm Soterios Johnson. On this episode, we're going to explore Lake County, a dynamic and idyllic destination just 2 hours north of San Francisco. The region is shaped by a volcano, mineral hot springs, and Clear Lake, where you can find some of California's best fishing. In recent years, Lake County has also become one of the Golden State's most intriguing wine regions. We'll start off with Melinda Price, who runs one of California's only saffron farms, Peace and Plenty Farm in Kelseyville.
We've got lovely volcanic soil, so in many ways, Lake County is just absolutely perfect for saffron.
After that, we'll talk to the Lady of the Lake, Clear Lake that is, Angela DePalma Dow, Lake County's water resources expert.
We get an average of about 15,000 visitors to Clear Lake, and these visitors come from all over the country to come visit Clear Lake just to experience the wonderful fishing that we have here.
And we'll wrap things up with Chef Tammy Lips of Ripe Choice Farm in Lakeport, who'll give us the lowdown on a marvelous hidden gem, Lake County's fast-growing wine country. That's all coming up on California Now. My first guest left a city life in tech to live out her dream of farming in the California countryside. Melinda Price is the co-owner of Peace and Plenty Farm in Kelseyville, where she's one of the state's rare few to farm the most expensive spice in the world, saffron. Melinda, welcome to California Now.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
So tell us, how did you go from being a model in Paris and working in tech in San Francisco to living the farm life in Lake County? I mean, where did that dream begin?
It actually began in Paris. Believe it or not, I realized after having been there for a while that all that glam and glitz wasn't making me happy. And the things that had made me happy were when I lived on Maui and was really in nature every day, and I couldn't wait to get back there to being with nature, but it took me about 30 years.
Wow. So how did you make it happen?
Meeting Simon, my husband, and having my daughter leave for college, which kind of allowed me to reinvent my life.
Neither you nor your partner, Simon, had any previous farming experience, right? So how big a hurdle was that to get over? I mean, did you have any kind of experience that you could leverage for farming?
We both had a lot of related experience. Simon had years and years of land and nature preserve management, so a lot of relatable skills in there. And I had a background in catering and being a bit of an entrepreneur. So that was some skill that actually was quite beneficial to the little farming enterprise we have here. Being a farmer had been something I'd held as a dream for a long time.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I mean, and so how did you settle on saffron?
Well, because we'd never grown vegetables commercially before, we didn't really trust our experience at growing a beautiful carrot. So we thought we had to focus on something that was kind of high cash value and niche and just focus on that one thing and make it great. We looked at a bunch of things. Nothing ticked all the boxes. And then Simon heard about the University of Vermont starting this program helping New England farmers grow saffron. And when we heard the word saffron, it was like all the lights in the sky, you know, lit up. It was like, yes, this is it.
Now, I understand saffron is actually a Mediterranean crop, right? There aren't many farmers who specialize in it here in the U.S. And there were pretty much no saffron farmers in California until you came along, right?
Yeah, and now we know why no one else is growing it.
Is it really that hard? I mean,
no, it's not that hard to grow. It's a very hardy plant. It's just that it takes a tremendous amount of labor to harvest, and labor is not cheap.
So you found land, obviously.
Yes.
And you chose Lake Counties to settle in. So why did you choose Lake County?
Partly because of the natural beauty of the place. It's so still pretty untouched and undeveloped. And so folks like us can come here and be able to afford to buy a beautiful old historic farm. The soil was perfect for growing saffron, the climate, and the proximity to San Francisco. We're 2 hours north of San Francisco.
So describe your farm. What is it like?
We have 7 acres. We're bordered on two sides by vineyards and one side by a seasonal creek. And we have a fairly good size lavender field, as well as the saffron fields, and a market garden, because we ended up actually growing vegetables in the end. And actually, we sell the vegetables, the saffron, everything else at a little farm stand we have right here on site.
Oh, that's really cool. So people can buy it right from the source. That's great. And the name of your farm is Peace and Plenty. Why did you choose that?
We were searching for a name, and here is this beautiful property with an old 1870s barn. And on the barn is a quilt pattern that some women started creating this quilt pattern in Lake County, of putting beautiful old quilt patterns on all different structures around the county. And our quilt pattern is called the Peace and Plenty pattern. It's an Amish pattern. And we were like, perfect. That's exactly what we want for our lives.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds great. No, perfect. Exactly. So let's talk about saffron a little bit. I think a lot of us don't really know exactly what it is. So talk to us about your crop. What is saffron exactly? Give us kind of some fun facts.
Yeah, sure. So saffron, like you said, is a Mediterranean crop. Many cultures claim it as their own original, you know, originating from their culture, and the debate is still on about where it originates. But it is a little fall blooming crocus, and it's a little beautiful purple flower. And inside the purple flower, there are stigmas and stamens. And the stigma is what becomes the little red threads that you put in your paella or your risotto milanese. It takes a lot of those beautiful little purple flowers to make enough to make a substantial dish. And they only bloom in the fall for about 6 weeks or so. And they bloom in the early, early morning. And if you haven't picked them by the evening, they are trash. They're very time sensitive picking, which is one of the hurdles you come across picking or harvesting. The other thing is we grew a lot of saffron, and there were points in the last few years where we were picking up to 60,000 flowers a day, if you can even imagine that.
No, that's a lot of flowers.
That's a lot of flowers.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So how could you even do that in a day? That's insane.
A big team and lots of chocolate and and you know, and so you have to get them out of the field, but then you also have to separate the stigmas from the flowers that same day.
Oh,
so we don't sleep much during harvest.
I can imagine. My gosh. So, and what makes Lake County so good for saffron farming?
We've got lovely volcanic soil. So our soil here is a sandy loam, really well draining. Saffron does not like clay. It will rot in clay. It also doesn't like any rain in the summer. It's not very frequently you're going to get rain here in California in the summer. And the cold, cold winter nights that we have here, we go down into the teens. It also really thrives in that environment. So in many ways, Lake County is just absolutely perfect for saffron.
Right. That sounds like it. It's amazing. Very Mediterranean.
Yes, in some ways it is.
Talk to me about your first harvest. I heard that after a lot of flower picking, how much did you end up with?
Yeah, we had these high hopes, you never know, starting something, but we got about, I think we got about 25 grams, which is hard to imagine in your head what that is.
I mean, that's like less than an ounce, right?
Oh yeah, much less than an ounce. And, you know, street value, our saffron sells for about $70 a gram. So, you know, $1,400 for, I don't know how many hours of work we put in that first year. But, you know, it's of course really grown since then. And our biggest harvest was 3 kilos. So a huge jump.
And then, so now you're growing like 3 kilos per harvest, which is really amazing. And, you know, you kind of made a name for yourself. I mean, Martha Stewart, she had you on her show, right? You're really making a name for yourselves, and they kind of put you on the map. So it's really exciting. So what do you do with the saffron once you harvest it? Like, what's involved in the post-harvest process? I mean, you say you take the stamens out the same day, and then what happens?
Yeah, so then it cures. It's kind of like wine, where you need to let it sit and dry and cure for a few months before you use it, because the flavor really intensifies. And once it's ready to go, we're selling it online through our website. We sell it at our farm stand, and then I make a ton of really fun, yummy things with it. Like we make a saffron lemonade, which local folks around here say they're addicted. They'll buy like literally 6 bottles a week. And then I make a saffron shortbread, saffron ice cream, saffron popsicles, and a saffron infused raw honey, which is delicious.
Oh, yes. I hear that's amazing.
Yeah.
So for people who haven't had saffron, how do you describe the taste? What kind of flavors does it add to food and drink when you add it?
Oh my goodness, it's so hard to describe because you can't really compare it to any other spice. It doesn't taste like cinnamon, you know? So I say I have to be poetic when I describe it, and I say it's kind of like amber, sunshine, butter, hay, tangerine. It's just very unique. And I must say somehow the marriage of butter and saffron is something that's extraordinary. And those two flavors go so well together. And I love how they can go savory or sweet, you know.
Do you ever get sick of saffron?
No, which is crazy. I mean, that being said, by the end of our 4th week of harvest, I'm sick of the color purple, but not the flavor. I'm still addicted to it.
The flower is purple, but the actual saffron is more of like an orangey color, right?
Orangey red, yeah.
Yeah. And you don't just grow and sell saffron, of course. You're eventually, as you said, able to dip into your original dream of growing veggies. Tell us a little bit about your farm stand.
Yeah, sure. So we're open all year round. We have a 4-season market garden, and everything's, you know, locally grown in season. So right now we have potatoes, carrots, bunching onions, collards, things like that. Summer, it's all about the tomatoes. And we have folks come from all over Northern California. We do little events and little tours to bring people in. The lavender field, when it's full of flowers, is a big draw. And it's fun to take part in some agritourism that's happening in Lake County.
Talk to us a little bit more about the agritourism. I mean, if I stop by your farm, what could I see and do there?
If you're lucky to catch Simon or I on a day we're not crazy busy, we could give you a little tour, or you could walk around yourself. We also do farm stays. So we have a vintage Airstream and a cottage in the lavender field that we rent out. We have chickens you can feed. People are, you know, just excited to go look at the saffron and always hoping to come see a purple flower. But you have to remember, it's only in the fall that they're going to be blooming.
But you can kind of get a little slice of farm life by having a visit there, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And we pride ourselves on being a regenerative no-till farm. So we're always excited to talk with people about our methods.
Now, if I came to visit, could I also help you pick saffron?
Absolutely.
I'm sure you probably wouldn't mind having the extra hands, right?
Come on down.
What's that like? I mean, is it hard to teach someone to pick it properly?
Not at all. It's super easy. They just need a strong back and some patience.
What kind of guests do you end up, you know, having to the farm? Are they local folks or out-of-towners? I bet you probably get a lot of Instagrammers, especially with those purple flowers.
We do. We get Instagrammers. And for the farm stays, we get a lot of folks from the city, from San Francisco, coming for a weekend getaway, folks from Sacramento. And we do get folks who come from long way away just to see the saffron, which is sweet.
So let's say I'm coming to stay with you at Peace and Plenty Farm for a long weekend. Where would you send me in and around Kelseyville? Say, you know, after our tour, like what are some of the places I could visit around the farm?
I definitely recommend downtown Kelseyville. It's only like 2 blocks long, but super sweet little country town. Lots of really neat little shops. There's a great antique store and a really cute general store with a candy shop. There's great little food restaurants in there. So a lot of just one-stop shopping street for everything you need while you're here.
What's a good, say, restaurant that if I wanted to catch dinner or something?
For an upscale kind of wonderful California cuisine experience, I'd recommend the Saw Shop in Kelseyville. And you can sit outside, you can bring your dogs, sip some local beer or wine, which is really great. And then I also love, more on a diner side, we love Lindahl's Sports Stop for big fluffy pancakes in the morning or a burger in the evening.
What are some of your favorite things to do in the area, like when you're not picking saffron or working on the farm?
I mean, basically all we do is farm. We hardly ever leave this place. So I'm not an expert on leisure time and like, to be honest, but we do love the state park down the road from us. There's boardwalks out into the marsh. And
that's Clear Lake State Park, right?
Clear Lake State Park, yeah. And Simon used to be an ornithologist before he was a farmer. So he loves going out there and looking at all the bird life.
And that's great that Simon must have a ball with all the birds and everything.
Oh, yeah. It's great. And it's one of the other things I love about our farm is we're only a mile away from that lake. So we get the overhead commute of all the waterfowl coming over the farm, which I love seeing.
As you're picking the flowers, you can kind of wave hi to the birds.
Exactly.
So what do you most want people to know about Lake County? I mean, why are you most happy to be there beyond the fact that it's perfect for saffron farming?
I moved here from San Francisco. And I was blown away by the friendliness of the people. I was actually kind of taken aback. Like, are they wanting money from me? Or why are they saying hello?
Why are they so nice to me?
Yeah, what do they want? But yeah, I actually, this sounds cheesy, but I actually got teary at the grocery store my first week here because everyone was like, hey, Joe. Hi, Susan. How you doing? Like, everybody knew each other. And I was like, oh my God, community. It's really what we lack so many times. So I love the warmth of the people. We have been welcomed to this community as outsiders, like unbelievably. So the people, the beautiful volcano and the lake. I mean, where else can you be in proximity to a huge, gorgeous lake and a volcano? And then it's just a beautiful kind of untouched area. There's not a lot of chains or, you know, we don't have strip malls here. So it's very still the kind of old school agricultural area.
That sounds perfect. Melinda, this has really been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us on California Now.
Thank you so much.
Melinda Price is the co-founder of Peace and Plenty Farm in Kelseyville. To learn more about Peace and Plenty Farm, visit peaceplentyfarm.com. That's peaceplentyfarm.com. This is California Now. My next guest is literally the lady of the lake, Clear Lake, that is. Angela DePalma Dow is the Water Resources and Invasive Species Program Coordinator for Lake County. She's also a columnist for Lake County News, where she shares helpful advice and tips for those looking to experience Clear Lake's offerings. Angela, welcome to California Now.
So great to be here. Thank you.
Angela, I think it's fair to say you know more than anyone about Clear Lake and the waters of Lake County. So can you sum up what it is that your job entails? I mean, you play a few roles, right?
Yeah, so I work for Water Resources. That's in the County of Lake departments. And what we do is a lot of working with water quality. So I manage our water quality monitoring programs. We do monthly monitoring out on Clear Lake to figure out what's going on with the water and look at trends over time. I work a lot with invasive species. We have a invasive mussel prevention program on the lake. And what that means is that we inspect, screen, and decontaminate any boat that comes into county from out of county to make sure they're not carrying invasive species like invasive quagga mussels or zebra mussels. If those mussels get introduced into our lake, they could devastate the ecology, basically destroy the ecosystem in ways that we don't know how we need to respond. And then they would also endanger the economies around the lake that depend on Clear Lake. So for fishing and recreation, and then it would also create these hazards on the beach. So when the mussels die, they leave these shells on the beach that are really sharp. And so you want to go to the lake, you know, walk with your dog, walk along the beach, look at the sunset, but you wouldn't be able to because these mussel shells are very sharp. So my job is very important to make sure that these invasive species don't get into our lake. And so far we've been very successful about keeping them out. And I just keep working at that every day.
Such great responsibility. I mean, you are basically the steward of the lake. And on top of all that, you're also you write this column for Lake County News. It's kind of like an advice style column, almost like a Dear Abby, where you give people advice and info on Clear Lake. So, I mean, how did you get into all of this line of work and become known as the Lady of the Lake? I'm assuming you just didn't rise from the lake like a myth from the King Arthur story.
Oh, I hope it. I wish it was like that. I love that myth. And that is the namesake that I took from. At my day job, working for the County Lake Water Resources, I would get a lot of phone calls. I get about 300 phone calls a year, and a lot of them are asking questions about, you know, what's the lake doing? How healthy is the lake? I want to go and, you know, visit this part of the lake, or I want to buy a property over here. What do I need to know? And so I was getting these questions, and I was like, there needs to be a way to distribute these questions and answers to the public and anybody that might, you know, be looking for that information. Lake County News is a free publication. You can get it. It's online only. The editor there is really supportive, and we've been able to have this column. I think my first column piece was in 2021 during the summer. And so I talked about, you know, what the lake was doing then, how it impacts wildlife and fishing and swimming. And then as I get questions either at my day job or sent to me as Lady of the Lake, I can answer them in the column. I try to write it so if you know nothing about lakes or water, you'll be able to understand what's going on and also have more resources. And then I also try to put information in there that even if you know about the lake or you know about water resources, you still learn something new and you have interesting information that you can explore further if you're interested.
Right. And California has some pretty famous lakes. I mean, can you describe the lake ecosystem of the Golden State? I mean, what kind of lakes are common here and why?
Yeah. So California has a lot of water bodies. A lot of them are reservoirs. So reservoirs start as creeks or streams, and then they're dammed, and then the water collects. And usually the dam in California, it's mostly power generating. So you put a dam on, and as the water flows through the dam, it generates power, and you can use that power to light cities and towns. The way that they function is they fill up with water during the winter time, and then throughout the summer, the water flows through so you can harness that water power, but also so that water can be used for drinking water or for downstream ecosystems during the summer and fall months when there's less water in those systems. Clear Lake does not function like that at all. Clear Lake is not a reservoir. It's a freshwater lake. It's been here for, you know, there's been water at this site for about 2 million years. The lake has been in the shape it's been in since like 500,000 years. So half a million years, it's kind of looked the way that it looks today. The way that the water flows through the lake is it comes from many streams and over the landscape and flows into the lake. And then it flows out of the lake at only one point and at the top of the water column. So at the surface of the water column, that water flows out. What that means is it's been here for so long, there's a lot of water and a lot of material that flows into the lake that sits there and has been trapped because only water at the surface can leave at the one outlet. Some of the water in Clear Lake has been there for years because it only has one outflow. So this means that Clear Lake is very different in ecosystem than a lot of the reservoirs that are in California. Clear Lake is also pretty shallow. It has an average depth of about 27 feet. So think of this very old, very shallow, basically pool that's sitting there. And then with our hot summers, it has a lot of material in it that's been there for many years. So there can be some algae growth and lots of green materials and lots of plants that grow in the lake.
It almost sounds like Clear Lake, it may not be all that clear.
That is correct. And in fact, it's the big misnomer that Clear Lake was named for the clarity of the water, even though there are some times a year where the water can be very clear. This time of year, when it's not raining and there's not wind, you can go out and you can see the bottom of the lake at many points around the lake, which is great. Late winter, spring is when it's really clear. But Clear Lake got its name when the first visitors for Congress came out to visit the lake and they noticed how clear the air was. So they probably started somewhere in Sacramento or San Francisco. And so you can imagine those city hubs, you know, about the 1850s, a lot of smoke, a lot of coal burning, things like that. So the air is very congested in San Francisco, of course, very foggy conditions. They come out over the mountains here into Clear Lake Valley, and the air is pristine and clear. Lake County around Clear Lake still has some of the best air quality in the whole state. And so that's how actually Clear Lake got its name, was from the air quality versus the clarity of the water.
Right. Oh, that's so funny. But I mean, the Clear Lake is so special in so many different ways, just the way you described it, like the ecosystem that it encourages and that the way the inflow and the outflow, it's just so interesting. So talk about that ecosystem. How special is it? Like, how unique is it when it comes to lakes around the country?
Yeah, no, this is fascinating about Clear Lake in that because it's shallow and warm and it has all these nutrients that have been there for many, many years, is that it's all basically growing matter, growing materials, and it's a food source for many fish and wildlife. So we have some of the best fishing in the country. And in fact, in 2020, Clear Lake was rated the number one bass fishing lake in the country by Bass Magazine. We know that we get an average of about 15,000 visitors to Clear Lake, and these visitors come from all over the country. So there's a lot that come within California, but then there's a lot that come from across the country and in Canada to come visit Clear Lake just to experience the wonderful fishing that we have here. You know, because we have such productivity in fish populations, that means that there's a lot of food there for the birds and the wildlife to eat. So we have a lot of birders that come here. We have a large number of species. They do a Christmas bird count. The Audubon Society does Christmas bird counts here at the Clear Lake State Park every year, and they get like hundreds of species that they count for birds. We have a resident American pelican population that lives on the lake, which is kind of cool. We have ospreys, so these are big predatory birds. They'll fly over the lake and you can see them dive down and catch a fish, and then they'll swim off with this fish that's still flapping in their talons. And so these are some great experiences, and they're only made possible because we have such a rich food base here in Clear Lake because of the ecosystem that Clear Lake produces.
Let's get back to your column for Lake County News, you know, Lady of the Lake. What are some of the most common questions you get asked about Clear Lake?
A lot of questions we get sometimes are, you know, what's going on with the lake? So, oh, I noticed these lines in the lake. What are they? And so I can a lot of times answer questions that are like technical aspects about the way lakes function. And so when you see these straight lines in the lake and they look kind of like foam lines and they're perfectly straight. And they happen a lot on water bodies that are pretty big. You see them a lot in the ocean, Great Lakes, but Clear Lake has them and they're called Langmuir lines. And it's the way that the wind pushes the top like meter or so of the water. I talk about those kinds of things that are technical that are pretty fascinating. And then we get a lot of questions about, especially this time of year, there's been a lot of rain, a lot of storms. So people want to know where they can get that information. Like, I live near a creek and I want to know, you know, how high the creek is and where that water is going. And so I'll do columns that have links and resources for data. Other questions that we get asked is what kind of projects are going on in the lake? Why is the water color brown? Why is it blue today? Why is it green?
Are there any kind of like memorable write-ins that you've received? Maybe kind of like came out of left field or like, wow, that was a question I never heard before.
I haven't got a question yet about, is there a lake monster in Clear Lake and what's the legend about that? We have a lot of vents. There's a lot of springs around Clear Lake. That's the other thing is Clear Lake is, there's a lot of geothermal activity around Clear Lake. We have a dormant volcano on the lake. There's a lot of different soil types. So below the lake surface, there's a lot of places where there can be gas that escapes and warm water. And so all of these things kind of will appear certain times of the year and people notice them. And when you have a flat lake and all of a sudden you have a bunch of bubbles, it's like, what is going on?
So, you know, say I'm a first time visitor to Clear Lake. What should I know about it?
Yeah, well, first thing, know that the lake is huge. There's about 120 miles of shoreline around the lake. And it's divided into three basins. And there's a lot of mountains and hills around those basins. So what that means is that the way that the wind and the water flow and the currents move through the lake is different in each of those basins. So if you're at one side of the lake and you're at a park and it's really windy and there's waves, you can drive half an hour to the other side of the lake and it's going to be flat and calm. It's like a split personality we always joke with about the lake. And you can explore them all in a single day.
I mean, you mentioned how the lake is such an amazing fishery. So for visitors who are interested in fishing, what should they know before going? Like, what kind of fish can you find there? What should people know?
Yeah, so fishing is excellent in Clear Lake. The population is very robust. For bass, there's black bass in there. There's crappie. Clear Lake actually set the state record for white crappie a couple years ago. And we have tournaments for bass and crappie. There's also catfishing is great. And let's say you don't have a boat, but you want to do some fishing from the shore. The catfish fishing from the shore is amazing. You know, we get lots of photos from people that are holding up these huge fish that they've caught just from shore off a dock for like 20 minutes and they catch these big catfish. We also have a catfish derby once a year. Right now, our lake has a lot of carp, which are invasive. So we're encouraging people to come and fish for carp. Carp is really fun to fish with a bow and arrow from, you know, you stand on top of your boat and you can fish with a bow and arrow. And we encourage people to do that because we want to get rid of the carp because they take up space that we need for the native fish. You know, there's some bluegill out there and red ear, some other small panfish that are successful fisheries, but bass and crappie are by far the prime ones that are out there.
Let's talk about the area around Clear Lake for a minute. I mean, what can you tell us about the surrounding towns? Like, where do you send people to stay or eat when they come to visit?
Great question. There's a lot of cute little towns that are located around Clear Lake. And you do need a car, really, to explore everything because everything is situated around the lake, like I said, is about 100 miles of shoreline. But they're all connected by a state highway. So it is easy to get from place to place. Kelseyville is in the wine country. It's just kind of south of the lake. And it has a great, cute little main street. There's places to stay there. Lots of cute little places to shop and eat. There's like Saw Shop for fine dining. A coffee place would be Studebaker's. And then a couple Mexican food restaurants that are delicious. And then if you wanted lake views or, you know, be able to pick up lunch and walk along the lake at a pretty park, that would be in downtown Lakeport. You know, if you want coffee, sandwich, pastry, that would be Angelina's Italian bakery. They've been there for about 25 years or 30 years, actually. Yeah. So it's an amazing place to get snacks. And then the park, Library Park, is right there. And that's a Lakeport City Park. And they have a lot of frontage along the lake. So there's benches, tables, there's a park for the kids, there's shoreline walkways. And then there's a lot of boats that launch there. There's two public launches and a lot of the fishing tournaments do their blasts off and weigh-ins there. So if you're interested in what that looks like, you can get your lunch and then go to the park and then see all the incoming fishermen on Saturdays and Sundays with their big bags of fish. So that's a great experience. And then in Upper Lake, so this is the north side of the lake. Upper Lake is a cute little main street, and they have a basically refurbished hotel and saloon. So the Blue Wing Saloon is a really nice eatery. They have an outdoor patio, live music during the summertime and springtime when it's nice to be outside in the shade. There's a refurbished hotel there called the Tallman Hotel. And then breakfast and coffee in Upper Lake at Double D's, which is a great coffee place.
That sounds great. What about activities for families? I mean, what kinds of things should visitors bringing kids and families consider putting on an itinerary?
I myself have a 19-month-old and we love going to Clear Lake State Park. So this is on the shores of Clear Lake. It's right outside the town of Kelseyville. So you can go get your lunch at Kelseyville and then go to the Clear Lake State Park. And there's two creeks that run through the state park before they empty into Clear Lake. So Kelsey Creek and Coal Creek are through the state park. And what this means is that there's a little wetland delta in the park. And so there's lots of bird activity. You can see herons, you can see otters. We saw a bobcat one time, which my son thought was amazing, but they have really nice trails. You know, if you want to do a little more hiking, they have a hiking trail. They have several hiking loops that get up into elevation. So you have these breathtaking views of Clear Lake. They have several campgrounds. So if you want to stay for a while at a campground where you can look out over the lake and have your barbecue. And then, of course, they have lots of day use areas and flat trails. They're handicap accessible. But also if you have little kids that like to run around and you need to keep a close eye on them, these are nice wide flat trails, very safe. And then if you have older kids and you want to have a little more, you know, activity, there's hikes that go up to the top of Mount Conocti. the access is through a county park, through the town of Kelseyville. Most of the hiking is on fire roads, but when you get up to the top, there's two peaks you can go to. The views are fabulous. So you can basically get, you know, an almost 300 degree view of the whole Clear Lake and the county and the mountains around Clear Lake. And it's just, it's a great experience.
Oh, it sounds so amazing. Angela, this has been so much fun and very educational at the same time. Thank you so much for joining us on California Now.
Thank you for having me. And I hope to see you soon up here in Lake County around Clear Lake.
Absolutely. Angela DePalma Dow is the Water Resources and Invasive Species Program Coordinator of Lake County and a columnist for Lake County News. To learn more about Clear Lake and Angela's work, visit lakeconews.com. That's lakeconews.com. This is California Now. My next guest is a professionally trained chef who traded a bustling city life in Los Angeles for the casual farm life in Lake County. Tammy Lips is the owner of Ripe Choice Farm and Catering in Lakeport, where she and her husband have created a popular destination for agritourism, weekend getaways, and events. They also grow grapes for the burgeoning winemaking scene in Lake County. Tammy, welcome to California Now.
Thank you.
So let's start out with how you came to Lake County. I mean, what drew you to the region?
It's really actually very much a fluke. I was had a very successful catering business in Manhattan Beach, California, there for 24 years, lived there, worked there. And I received an email one day about a property that was on the market. Very special niche property. Never heard of Lake County before ever in my life. Been to Napa many times and never knew about it. So the listing agent for the property sent me an email, and she sent emails to all the professionals, or lots of professionals, I should say, event planners, chefs, catering, all those kind of people in that industry about this property. And you know how many kinds of emails you get, you know, all the time, and who opens all of them? Nobody. But I just happened to open this one, and the photographs of the property were so amazing and beautiful. It was just like, it took my breath away. So I went, oh my gosh, this might be a possible place for me to end up, do my thing, but maybe perhaps people come to me. It's on a little bit smaller scale than me running all over LA for the rest of my life. But that's how I even found out about Lake County. I just opened an email and saw those beautiful property photos.
So you visit the property, you end up, you love it, you buy it, you eventually get things going, and Ripe Choice Farm became a destination. Tell us about the farm and what's the property like? What makes it unique?
It is a beautiful old farm, 6 acres, all organic. Our grapevines are certified organic. We have 116 fruit trees, mostly apples, which is odd for pear country, but we do have pears, peaches, plum, little French plums, which are amazing. We grow our own organic vegetables that we use in our catering, of course, because our full service catering is housed in our barn event space on the property. And if I didn't mention, 6 acres, so it's chock full of stuff. I know it's small, but we have walnut trees, we have our orchard, we have our vineyards, and we do have a few animals, some mini pigs and a tortoise and some chickens. But everybody has a job here. So meaning that the pigs are hospitality. People love them. Children love to pet them and play with them. Adults love to do that as well. But we're busy here. And the whole idea was to just use everything that was already here and given to us like a gift, basically. The only thing we really had to do, not being farmers previously, was to learn how to grow our vegetables and things that we use on a larger scale. I mean, I was used to doing it in my backyard in Manhattan Beach, but that's a tiny little piece of ground.
And it's a lot different when you're on a scale of 6 acres.
Yeah, exactly. You know, my hydroponic gardens need no more be used. I have dirt.
right. Exactly. So, I want to get to how you kind of got from, you know, hydroponics to actually becoming a farmer. But before we do that, let's talk about your vineyard. I mean, in addition to all the fruit and everything else you're growing the grapes and you have this vineyard. Tell us about that.
It's lovely. It's about an acre and a half of just beautiful, beautiful Merlot grapes, certified organic. Even having our own grapes was amazing. We didn't really have, you know, an idea about making our own wine, but the grapes to sell them and have them be organic and, you know, sell them to the wineries who are organic and want to use them was kind of the goal, which has been luckily very successful. So we actually realized the first harvest of that after we moved in the year of 2020. We are not farmers, and someone else was already kind of tending to the property that way and taking care of those and making sure they're healthy and doing all the right things. So we kept that person on to do that. And thank goodness, because we still had to learn how to, you know, plant carrots and lettuces and all that stuff.
All right, let's talk about the experience. So like if I stopped by to visit Ripe Choice Farm today, what would I experience?
The seasons are all very different here. So we're moving from winter into spring. Things are starting to bloom. It's bud break for a lot of the grapevines. If you're driving into our property on Soda Bay Road in the Big Valley, you're going to pass lots of orchards of pears and walnuts and grapevines everywhere. And then you pull into our property, the gate opens and the orchard starts there. So you pull through some of the apple trees and the persimmon tree, and the first thing you see is the farmhouse on your left. And it's kind of like a, you know, it's just a big, beautiful old 1904 farmhouse that is in amazing condition. And then you see the barn in the back and you're driving through the orchard. It's just like, I mean, I haven't heard one person pull onto the property that's never been here before and go, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful.
And for people visiting, I mean, I imagine the amazing meals you offer on the farm are a big draw. Tell us about the chef's dinners on the vineyard and the farm to fork breakfast. I mean, they both sound delicious.
Yeah. So that's a nice thing about what we do offer people here. Even though we do events and weddings and all that stuff here too, guests have the option of pre-ordering meals from us. And during, you know, a lovely warm season, they can do chef's table dinners in the vineyard. And those are 5-course meals that are chef driven and paired with local wines. We don't give them a menu. What we do is ask them of any, you know, dietary restrictions or eating styles that we should be aware of. And then we create a seasonal menu based on that. And then they sit in the vineyard. We set them up. I mean, we've done anywhere from 2 to 20 people like that. But otherwise, people can just order dinner to be delivered to the loft or breakfast delivered to the loft. And, you know, dinners are paired with paired with a bottle of local wine. And breakfasts are major. We really feed you here. So think of a farmhouse breakfast with some sort of seasonal egg dish. And this is all depending on your dietary eating styles or restrictions that we find out ahead of time. Normally some house-made scones or biscuits or some kind of, you know, baked treat that way, yogurts and fresh fruits and berries from our local farm here, Edenberry Farm, which grows amazing, amazing raspberries and blackberries. And then it would be, you know, farmhouse potatoes with whatever vegetables are kind of need to be used, like the zucchini and fresh tomatoes and peppers and stuff from the farm, and either bacon or sausage. Sometimes we make it locally. Sometimes we buy it locally. So it's a real kind of what's in the garden, what can we use? But it's very hearty, and usually people don't finish it all. So what they do is a lot of times if they have an extended stay, they even save some of it later and go, oh, this will be my snack for, you know, the afternoon or whatever.
Tell me more about the overnight options at your farm. I mean, where do guests stay? What's that experience like?
So we have a beautiful loft that was built in the barn above the commercial kitchen in the barn. And it's a nice, very large space, actually. It is a loft. king size bed, beautiful fan over them in the ceiling that is from Switzerland, old windows where you're looking out over the lake in the back and over the property. There's sitting areas, and we get all kinds of people. We get weekenders, we get people in town that are working for a couple of weeks, like doctors, traveling nurses. But most of our people are people in from San Francisco, Sacramento area, or from up north, Oregon or Washington, and they just want to get the heck out of Dodge. I mean, even people from Southern California, where we're from. And it's just a nice place where you can hunker down and never leave, and we feed you every meal you need. Or, you know, it's your base for sleeping, and then you go out and go wine tasting or use the lake in the summer and do all the things you can do there. We get a lot of fishermen during fishing season. We also do offer farm stay in the back of the property behind the barn for Harvest Host guests. I don't know if you're familiar with Harvest Host, but that is sort of an RV club, an upscale RV club situation. And if you're a member of that, then there are properties that are listed, such as ours, where you can stay for free one night. And we don't provide any hookups or anything like that, but you get to stay on these beautiful, lovely farms and properties and wineries. A lot of the wineries up here have that too, but they always have a wonderful experience, and they just pull on the property and we give them a place to park that's appropriate. And they can just enjoy the sunset, have a glass of wine, walk around the vineyard or the orchard, you know, and just chill.
Sounds great. It sounds really great. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Lake County wine. I mean, you're known locally for Ripe Choice, of course, but you're also sought out for your wine expertise. I mean, Lake County is one of California's more intriguing wine regions. So what's your kind of like 30,000 foot take on Lake County wine?
Well, I didn't even know it existed, and I'm a big, huge California wine freak in the sense that that's what I enjoy. That's what I like. What I like to experience. Not that I don't enjoy all the others, but specifically love that, and was so pleasantly surprised at the quality of what was available here and what people were doing here. And even in the now just 4 years being here, what the things that I've tasted and what's happening. I think, gosh, when we moved here, I think there maybe were 11 wineries here. And now I believe there's over 30, maybe 40. And not knowing until I really delved into the history, I mean, this was all wine country before Prohibition. They ripped out the grapes and then started planting pears and walnuts, which all we're known for here as well as the Sauvignon Blanc grape, which grows really, really well here. That's kind of the one Lake County has been known for. But even over the last few years, so many lovely reds are coming out of this. And yeah, it was really nice. And, you know, not nearly the pricing that you get with the experience of going to Napa, not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's a little bit more affordable. The tastings are more affordable. The wines are good, even though, you know, I don't think anybody ever goes to one winery and absolutely loves everything. But it's all here, and it's available, and there's good stuff.
Primarily like Sauvignon Blanc, but also branching out into some reds as well.
Oh, yes. I mean, for instance, Six Sigma Ranch and Winery, they're known for their Tempranillo, which is also, you know, a grape that you don't see much outside of Spain. Yeah. And Merlot coming back. I mean, it's a wonderful blending grape, sure. But I mean, just on its own, there's some lovely wines here that are made just with Merlot. I'm not at a loss of finding something I enjoy, that's for sure.
For people who come to visit, you know, somebody who's a wine novice comes to stay with you looking for a memorable wine tasting experience, where do you send them?
Lots of different places. Sometimes people will tell us what they like, but we have a list that we send them to if they don't want to go far. And not everything is really that far. Probably 30 minutes away is the furthest from some of these places, but they're also their own experiences. So for instance, just a mile away from us, we have Chase Water Wine and Olive Mill. So they also grow their own olives, and you can taste their wines and their olive oils all at the same time. And that's really a lovely experience, beautiful property. It's a large property, so you can sit outside, play bocce ball. And then also the same distance is the Shannon family of wines. They've built a lovely, beautiful new tasting room, very Napa-esque, I should say. It's your tasting room, but they have, in the summer, you can pick zinnias. They have a cattle ranch where they raise their own sheep. So you can purchase lamb and meats from them. They have events all week long. So, you know, you could go on a Tuesday night and then there'll be a taco truck outside. Thursday night is, you know, grilled cheese and tomato soup. And then Friday night's pizza night. And we have a lovely company called Dough Baby Pizza that makes their pizzas there and sells out every time. We send people to Six Sigma Ranch because that's a whole nother ranch experience with an old stage stop tasting room. They also have their own cattle and sheep that they raise and harvest. So that stuff is available to purchase through them. Just recently, and now a new Hootopia experience right there on their property. They have like 4,300 acres. And the glamping situation has taken over there. Amazing glamping through Hootopia and Six Sigma Ranch. They also do a lot of harvest hosts, so you can pull your RVs and campers and sprinter vans and everything in there and enjoy some beautiful wine. Take a Pinscour tour up to the top of the mountains there in the Pinot Noir field, and they pour a bottle of wine for you, and you can go Lake County diamond hunting up there. And
what's Lake County diamond hunting?
So we have Lake County diamonds, and what that is in the soil, the volcanic soil, if you're kicking it around or digging in it, you're likely to find in those areas what looks like it could be a diamond in the rough. It's not a diamond, of course, but it's clear, and it's a stone. And a lot of people, artisans here, make jewelry out of it, or people just collect them and keep them in a little dish or give them to a loved one. But, you know, you look down and there's something shiny in the dirt, and it's a Lake County diamond.
So what about, like, for more experienced enophiles? Are there places you'd like to recommend for somebody who has, say, a more refined palate, who really knows wine?
Well, I would say any of those places I've mentioned so far. Also, another favorite would be Langtree Vineyards in kind of the Middletown area. It's Langtree Farms and Vineyard, and that's all Lily Langtree, the actress from back in the day. She was one of the first women to plant grapevines and have her own farm, and rumor has it she had lots of houses on the property for her gentleman friends to live there as well. but they have some really lovely, amazing wines, and all the places I've mentioned so far. Foltz Family Vineyard, I enjoy them so much. They're fun. They're right near Six Sigma and a little closer than Langtree. Langtree is probably the furthest out, but it's a gorgeous property, and the old farmhouse has been redone, and it's just really, really beautiful. And, you know, there are wineries all around the lake. Brassfields on the other side of the lake, which is a beautiful property and a lovely wines to taste there. And then we've got Stonehouse Cellars over there. I mentioned Foltz Family because they have my favorite sparkling wine that's made here. And it's their Blanc de Blanc. And it's, you know, it's as close to champagne as you can get without being in champagne. But, you know, I think that if you take the time and visit each one of those, you're definitely going to find something you enjoy, even if you're the snootiest of a wine person.
Right, right. Well, Tammy, this has been really wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us on California Now.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Lovely.
Tammy Lips is the owner of Ripe Choice Farm and Catering in Lakeport. To learn more about the farm, visit them at ripechoice.net. That's ripechoice.net. This is California Now. Thank you for listening to California Now. We hope to see you in the Golden State soon. This podcast is produced by Visit California. I'm your host, Sotirios Johnson. Our producer is Kate Eppelboim. Jessica Marshall is our technical lead. John Godfrey is our editorial director. And the theme song is by Aaron Taus. Additional music by Casey. You can find our show on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts.